All right. So my name is Lena Evers-Holstrom. I'm interviewing Stefan.
Stefan, that's right. Yep.
Okay. Fletcher for the UW System Restructuring Project. Can you say your name and then spell out your last name?
Stefan Fletcher, and that is F for Frank, L-E-T-C-H-E-R.
All right. Looks like we're all set.
Great.
Okay, so why don't we start pretty broad? So what brought you to the UW system, and how long did you hold your position before restructuring started?
My kind of journey in the UW system actually started as an undergraduate student. I was an undergraduate student up at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. I moved over here from the UK, so spent 4 years up in Superior. During my doctoral program at Michigan State University, I worked at the UW system during the summers. So I worked for the Office of the President, the Board of Regents Office, and then the Senior Vice President for Administration and Fiscal Affairs. I permanently joined the UW system kind of in the precursor role to my current one in January of 2015. I was kind of from then until restructuring, I think you'll count, and it's about nearly 3 years, 2 3/4, let's say, years, until restructuring was announced in October of 2017.
All right.
Yeah.
So how was restructuring sort of like presented to you?
So I think if you look at it, I was involved on the very, very front end of the conversations about restructuring. I remember having to do a bit of background research and background work about other consolidations that occurred at other systems around the United States in higher education. Working through, I think, with system leadership, if you want to go forward with this route, what would it take to kind of do the announcement? And then how do you kind of actually get your arms around what was the biggest higher education project really since the 1970s, when the two public higher education systems were merged to form the UW system as it is today, really.
Yeah, wasn't that, that was the one where they created the colleges as they were, right?
So that was, so you had the University of Wisconsin, and then you had the Wisconsin State Universities, and so it was how do you bring those two systems of education, which did include some of those campuses, kind of how do you bring those two together? Obviously, since then, you had the closure of one of the branch campuses through a legislative task force way, way, way before restructuring. But there was a two-year campus in Medford, Wisconsin, that was closed. I forget, and you could look at the records for that, but I forget off the top of my head. But
at some point.
Yeah, it was, I think in the 1980s, maybe early 1990s, but I would double check.
Yeah. So, could you sort of expand on that? Like those early, the early decision-making stuff?
Sure. I think if you looked at the kind of goals of the project and why the project, well, the rationale, right? So one, UW colleges had several years of substantial declining enrollment. Between 2010 and 2017, you had an average decline or a decline of up to 54% in student FTEs at some of those institutions. You had an average, I think, in the it's about 30% or around that number, and I can get you the specifics if you remind me later on. But if you looked at the colleges as a whole, and so the question was, are the two-year campuses as they're currently conceived sustainable? Because if you have that much of a decline in tuition revenue, and students actually attending your campus, you do have a subsequent decline in tuition revenue, which makes the problem being, okay, you know, we as the University of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Idea, have a commitment to outreach to various parts of the state, including some of our most rural communities, where these two-year campuses are located. There's a commitment from the municipalities themselves because they fund or help to fund the facilities where those two-year campuses are located. And so what are the options that we have on the table? Closing campuses was never a preference, was never really an option because of our commitment to the Wisconsin Idea, because of the need and the desire to have strong access points for people to come in at the kind of lower tuition rate and then maybe move to a four-year institution later on. So we looked at that, but didn't, I would say that was never seriously, in my opinion, on the table. What we ended up on was the model that we proposed to our accreditor, which was the restructuring project, merging or joining, I'd say, as Carleen van der Zand would correct me, but joining the 13 two-year campuses with seven of the research and comprehensive universities, and then integrating various parts of what was UW Extension with both UW System Administration and UW Madison. For UW Madison, of course, having the cooperative extension was almost coming back full circle because that is where it started. So,
yeah, why joining and not merging?
There are technical differences when it comes to accreditation in terms of being precise with the language that you use, and that was something very early on. Because if you looked at the way that we did this, the branch campuses were joined with the operations of accredited entities. It was UW College's accreditation was basically being subsumed, and the accreditation of the four-year institutions was their application had to be, okay, we would like to join one, two, or in Green Bay's case, three branch campuses to our existing accreditation. So there are technical differences. If you speak to Carleen, have you talked to Carleen van der Zander yet? Mm-hmm. Carleen was the individual who was pretty instrumental in completing the accreditation process for the UW system and helping to work with our federal accreditor, the Higher Learning Commission. And so I just remember very early on in the project, Carleen would have to correct people consistently and say, it's a joy, you know, it's joining, it's not merging, and here's the differences there. So.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
I guess we went over this a little, but sure. Could you say a little bit about your position within the system and how that's evolved throughout the restructuring process?
Sure. So when I joined the system in January 2015, I was the special assistant to the then senior vice president for administration and fiscal affairs. If you think about kind of what a chief of staff does in terms of handling issues, facilitating communication, that was kind of my role initially when I came in. My career in the system thus far has been shaped by kind of two questions. One, a question around how we developed, communicated, and approved system-wide policies that apply to, you know, as the name indicates, all UW system schools. And really now I oversee about 300 plus system administrative policies that relate to finance, academic affairs, general operations, and helping to design, you know, again, how they're organized, communicated, how we draft them, setting the overall framework and bringing consistency to that process. So that was my role kind of before restructuring, was that chief of staff policy management role. Then, when restructuring and research, I did a lot of benchmarking on various sorts of issues for system leadership. Then, with restructuring, the question was, oh, would you like to oversee the restructuring project and serve as the project lead? And so I said, yes, I would do that. That was the journey from 2017 onwards, really, was kind of how do you navigate and put your arms around this massive project. I mean, during the course of the project, as an example of scale, library. There were 423,000 library items moved during the course of the project in under 2 years. On the student information system side, there were 11,738 student records that had to be moved from one instance of the student information system at UW colleges to seven different configurations of the student information system at the 7 4-year receiving schools. Just to give you so it was part of this in the very, very beginning was how do you get your arms around all these different issues and kind of work through that. And again, I think one thing I can't reiterate enough, and I'll do it in this forum as well, is to praise the amount of effort and hard work that people, employees in particular, put on or around the system during the past 2 and a bit years now to minimize the disruption of this transition to students and to faculty and staff. But in the very beginning, it was really, okay, how are we going to do this? So now, just to close out on the actual question, sorry, Lena. Now, there was a project management office that was formed during restructuring to oversee the project, to help facilitate and coordinate the project at the system level. One of my ongoing responsibilities now is to continue to oversee that office as it's transitioned to support 11 or 12 now different system-wide initiatives as restructuring has kind of milestones have been completed and wound down. There have been other projects that they're like, oh, well, you know, would you guys also like to help out with, you know, the implementation of a student success tool, the title and total compensation project, you know, various other sorts of things that have come on that it's just kind of naturally flowed into that.
All right.
Yeah.
So starting with like all of these big kind of, how do you sort of turn sort of like big problems into like a more concrete, like, these are the things that like we need to really focus on and like go about setting those timelines?
Sure. So I think one, Carlene and the accreditors provided guidance in terms of here are the issues you should think about, right? In terms of if you want to go about this, here is what we would expect you to think about during the course of your planning. And so if you go back to the original application that we submitted to HLC, we had to propose, you know, how we were going to maintain the accreditation of the 4-year schools and join these branch campuses onto those 4-year schools. So really things like academic programming, if you think about the finances of the institutions, if you think about how student services would operate during the transition and how they would be planned for long term. Again, the key in my mind is how these things would over time integrate into the 4-year institution, because at the end of the day, that was the accredited entity from basically July 1, June 28th technically, but July 1 of 2018 when HLC approved the joining of the campuses. How would services to those branch campus students Now they were the responsibility of the four-year institutions continue to operate in these areas. How do you make sure that they're again adequately supported? How does the integration of faculty work and kind of academic planning work? And how do you maintain academic quality at those two-year schools? Part of the project's goals, though, if you go back to, you know, so the HLC application is like one guiding light for the project. Those are the, you have to meet what you said you would tell your accreditors that you would do. If you don't do that, you're in trouble. A lot of trouble. Two, the Department of Education expects you to be planning this in a way that will make sure that financial aid transition is handled seamlessly. And you have to work with the Department of Ed not only to make sure that financial aid is still being delivered, because again, you have to be approved by the department to issue Title IV, in the simplest, like federal financial aid. And so there's a transition that you have to work with the department on to make sure that that is being handled and documented appropriately, and that this entity that was UW Colleges is wound down in a way that the department believes it has met their expectations. You know, you have to kind of close all the documentation out, close the accounts appropriately, boom, 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 and make sure that that is being done in a way that the Department of Education says, yes, you have both transitioned financial aid awarding and distribution appropriately, and you've also wound down this former entity that was approved for that accordingly. The same with the Department of Homeland Security. You have to transition and make sure that you get approval or adequate authorization, I should say, from the department so that the branch campuses can, through the main campus, now have international students attend there, that you can issue F1 student visas and those sorts of things. And so what we tried to do was identify these sorts of issues. Like, we had various functional teams that were stood up through the course of the project very early on that looked at issues like this, that we sat down and identified, okay, what's our universe of issues that we have to kind of get working on? Athletics, student visas, accreditation. We had a consistent approach at the beginning, which was have a tripartite partnership. One, representation from the receiving institutions. Two, representation from system administration to look at issues or things that we needed to fix at the system level that campuses could not do by themselves. And then three, have staff from the UW Colleges and Extension Central Office who would help, and very graciously, I will say this as well, with the transition of these services to the four-year schools and help them be as successful as they could be assuming responsibility for these various services, like student visa issuance or libraries as an example. And so we tried that matrixed approach very early on, and we deferred a lot to subject matter experts to help us think about what's your timeline for completing this multitude of different tasks. And again, we brought people together at key stages so that everyone could see each other's planning and could ask questions and be like, oh, wait, this timeline for financial aid isn't going to work from a registrar's perspective. How do we figure this out? So we had to try and bring people together at various key points to say, you know, you all have access to milestones and the roadmap, but is this working for all of you? Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
How does that work from a, could you expand on that from like a communication perspective of like how you get people in maybe different areas?
Yeah, so in the very beginning, we had a steering committee, and I think various people have talked about the steering committee that had that same tripartite representation, system admin, colleges extension, and the receiving institutions, including Madison. We had the we set the steering committee meeting up the day after the Board of Regents approved the project. I remember it like it was yesterday because we were at Regent Street and 126 A and B. The room was too small for a group of that size, but that's all we had available to us at that point. But we got going right from the day after the board approved the project in November 2017. What functional teams did we need to stand up? What were the key issues that we needed to address? So the steering committee always served in an oversight capacity for the project, but also served as bringing key system-wide decisions or thoughts back to each of the campuses and translating that. We did have, and something that's very unique, I think, for a project management office, we had an integrated communications function in the PMO so that we could try and get at various levels of the project what was going on. So each campus had their own planning process going on. So there was a system plan, and then under that were like eight basically different planning processes that were occurring at each of the institutions for things they needed to take responsibility for. So again, part of that was trying to define what is the campus responsible for, what is the system responsible for, where we needed a more consistent approach, we issued system-wide decisions or had the system-wide functional teams figure that out in their own individual sorts of teams. But then with representation from all of those teams, that was great because each of the campuses then had a common message coming out from those groups. On this scale of project, communications is always tough. You always think, oh, haven't we communicated X 15 times already? But there's always someone who's like, well, did we really say that? Because there's a lot going on, especially at the beginning when you're just trying to get your arms around everything. People, I think, were A, worried about, to be honest, what the project meant for them in terms of their life. Even though we tried to make commitments very early on that would allay people's fears about losing their job. You know, we said, if you're a branch campus employee, you'll be the transition will be made to the receiving institution. If you're a central colleges and extension employee, you have a guaranteed 2-year contract. That's to kind of work with us over the next 2 years. And again, the willingness and collaboration of those individuals was key in successfully transitioning these services across. We could not have done it without them, to be honest. But throughout the project, we tried to keep a regular cadence of meeting with system leadership, escalating issues, escalating questions. We had an FAQ page set up very early on in the project to address key questions that we got, which we got a lot of questions on day one. I remember the PMO was set up during the course of the first bit of the project. So it wasn't like we had a PMO fully staffed like day one, right? It's like we had to do the hiring. And so for the beginning, it was Gillian Kitchen, who served as a deputy project lead, myself, a couple of people from our consulting partners at Huron, who had to really help in terms of, again, trying to get our arms around this with system leadership. And I remember being in that building just down the street, Van Hise Hall, until pretty regularly, 11 o'clock at night, coming in at 7 a.m. each day for about a good 6 weeks at the beginning of the project, honestly. And I remember one individual asked me, like, Stefan, could you not send out emails at 11 p.m.? And I thought, I'd rather not be in Van Hise Hall until 11 p.m. But, you know, that's just the way that it was at the time. And we did what we needed to do. The one thing I think a lesson I learned, or if I could have done it things differently, I would have gotten out to the receiving institutions and the branch campuses sooner, because I think in our system, what people react positively to is seeing a face, seeing someone out there who's listening to them, who's trying to address questions, etc. But I think given where we were, it is difficult to do that with, you know, when it's basic, when you have few staff and you need to coordinate the project, it's difficult to kind of do that. There has to be a trade-off. So
yeah, was part of that, I know that a lot of people heard about the project from the news.
do you have a rubbish bin in here by chance?
Yeah, we have one over here.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I'm going to throw my gum out. So that was unfortunate. I will say that. I mean, again, that was something that lingered with the project for the first part, especially was we found out about this in the media. There were very few people who knew. And I will say that that was definitely not anyone's intention in system administration. We had a communications plan that was that would have rolled this out in an appropriate fashion and that we were in the middle of. When it was leaked, I think to the news, that would be a fair summation on my part. When the kind of, when it did get leaked to the news, we needed to try and adjust on the fly to that issue. Sometimes your best laid intentions and best laid plans don't work out the way that you hope. I think, you know, the concern at the beginning, as you probably heard from some, was, well, why didn't we spend a year studying this project and and having a long consultation period? And I've ruminated over that, I've reflected on it, and having lived with the project for the past few years and having been a former student government leader up at Superior who is 100% supportive and understands what shared governance is about in this system, I can see why, and very much supportive of why we wanted to reduce uncertainty. You'd have had for a year the whole, well, are these campuses going to shut? Are we going to, what are we going to do? Like this whole pendulum hanging over the campuses for a year or so. And then we may have reached probably the same conclusion that something would have needed to have been done. And the value that was placed on maintaining those two-year institutions as access points was a factor right from the beginning. Moving quickly and efficiently in thinking about a solution and thinking about, again, what the best solution was for maintaining access, expanding educational opportunity, leveraging the education and curriculum that the four-year institutions can bring, which you've seen already in some of the collaborative programming that's been proposed and approved by the Board of Regents to bring certain upper-level classes and courses and certificates, etc., to those two-year campuses to help to meet workforce needs. Those were unique opportunities that I don't know that that particular, take X number of time would have changed anything and would have only created more uncertainty for not just potential students, current students, employees, etc. So that's kind of I think the question that typically that kind of came up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a lose-lose, I mean, scenario either way, seems like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the beginning of the project, obviously, there was a lot of... there's never an easy way to go about this scale of organizational structural change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we initially, you know, when the timeline was developed, the two-year kind of timeline where accreditation would transfer year one, operations and the actual service would transition in June of 2019. again, there are some days where I stood back and looked at the timeline, and I'm like, man, we this is quite an aggressive timeline, right? Part of it in the beginning was having to reassure people, no, we're not going to be able to transition financial aid, the student information system, all of these things by June 1st, 2018, or 7 months. That was not going to happen. But again, in the beginning, when you talk about communication, people saw in the initial newspaper articles the July 1, 2018 date, and they were like, oh, wait, this is all going to happen on July 1, 2018. So how we had to counteract that very quickly to say, hold on, time out. Let's go back to the accreditation submission. Let's reflect on the fact that this is really a phased 2-year project, and let's try and stick to that. And this is the sensible, rational way that we're going to approach this project. And I think that proposal, that 1,400 plus pages of proposal, helped. The follow-up visit, when we were already in the fall of 2018, when they've done the approval, they wanted to check in and see how planning was going. Were we doing what we said we would do? With the accreditors came and they met with each institution. They met with various system-wide groups, like your system-wide chief business officers group for the receiving institutions, your provosts, your chancellors, to see, okay, do you guys understand the scale? And you guys said this in your proposal. Are you really on course to transition these services across? And we were able to speak pretty well to, again, by that stage in the fall, how we had divided out responsibility for certain tasks, how planning was going at each of the institutions. And that was a successful effort, but that was another 1,200 plus pages of paperwork to submit to the accreditor. I mean, there were over 2,600-2,700 pages of planning and implementation paperwork that support this project. So it's no small endeavor.
Definitely not.
Yep.
Where would you say that, you were, which functional teams were you most involved with, or saw the most amount of discussion happening?
Sure. So there are a few kind of core principles, right, that you've seen and people have talked to you about the stated goals of the project several times, right? I mean, or no? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's always good to hear it again.
Educational opportunity, maintaining access, leveraging, our operational efficiencies, being examples of some of those goals, right? And again, I think maintaining the affordability at the schools being another core goal as part of that. The core principle I look at from a very, very baseline perspective, and in the beginning, remember, we did talk with peer systems, particularly the University System of Georgia, that had gone through this, that I had been to their presentation, at the National Chief Business Officers Conference the summer before all this. I'd gone to their conference and been like, oh, this is how, Georgia, this is kind of an interesting presentation about how they'd approach a merger and consolidation style project. Their approach was very different, but the issues, they would, financial aid will be one of the last things that you close out on. And it's true, it has been, just because of how much work you have to do with the Department of Education. So we were able to learn a lot from their project, even though their approach was very different than us, put it that way. Run me a question, Lena, sorry.
Something about functional teams.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So the functional teams, given that I had to work with Vice President Kramer, Vice President Kramer was the chair of the steering committee, and so we had to basically be the individuals responsible for charging each of these functional teams up front, right? And standing them up pretty early on. Really asking them to explore the universe of issues and problems that we should work through. Because again, you can't run the project centrally and think that you know everything there is to know about every financial aid issue that's going to arise in the next 2 years. You have to have deference to subject matter experts, the financial aid directors at the receiving institutions, and at UW College as an extension, to work with your federal partners to come up with a, again, rational approach for transitioning what we needed to do. So I was involved, with a lot of the functional teams just by nature of the role. In terms of focus areas, if you became focuses, the student information system, the transfer of those student records, that had to be done and had to be done correctly. Again, 11,738. Just on that part of the project, we would estimate that between consultant time and campus staff time, there were about 19,000 hours just spent on that part of restructuring. So that's 5 years worth of hours spent on one component of restructuring. And that had its own kind of more complex governance structure that made it more like a typical IT project, which is kind of what it needed to end up being. So SIS was a focus point. Financial aid, don't screw up people's financial aid. That was key, right? Have people register for classes. We could not have people registering for classes in spring 2018 or spring 2019, in the two major focal transition points. So how are you setting up the systems to allow that to occur? And how are you working with the federal government to make sure that A, they're comfortable in the transition year with UW College as an extension? So the central office in 2018-19 became a service provider for the four-year institutions. There were signed memoranda of understanding with each four-year institution. 90% of it was boilerplate language. 10% of it was customized to the business process needs of each institution. We sat down with the leadership of each institution, system admin, college's extension as a service provider, and the receiving institution, and worked through these 32 core functions. You know, veteran services, who's going to be providing that? What's the campus's role? What's colleges and extensions role for this 2018-19 period? So that everyone knew what each other was supposed to do. We had a management plan underlying that that said, resolve issues at the lowest level you can, at the unit level, so between the veteran services staff, at the campus colleges level. Only then, if you can't resolve at these two lower levels, should you then raise issues to system administration? Because what you don't want is bottlenecking of problems in a small funnel at system admin with vice presidents who are, and the president, who very knowledgeable, very experienced with, you know, and I'd say in this project, moved pretty quickly with the decisions that they had to make. But you don't want to overload that group, that small group, with issues that they're removed from by three or four layers in terms of like the actual issue here, and you're asking them to make a decision about something that should not be coming to them. So we established that as a principle in the management plan through an issue escalation process. So those, when you talk about communication, I'm a big fan of documented, having people sign, and then pointing back to something and saying, well, this is what we all agreed to here. Let's remember that. And, you know, let's have the document, like, distribute this document widely so that you know who's responsible for X during the transition year.
Could you maybe expand on that, like, an example or two of something of, like, an issue occurring and
I think if you were to look at, let's say, like, look at HR, right, as an example. So there were around just shy of 1,900 employee appointments we needed to transition. So, again, system, we set the framework. We said, if you're at a receiving institution, you'll transition, or if you're at a branch campus, you'll transition to the receiving institution. If you're in the central office, you have an appointment for 2 years. part of the discussion around there were pieces that system was responsible for, right? We needed to work with the board to make sure that faculty tenure was transferred to each receiving institution, so that tenure would transfer in like for like, roughly speaking, so that people wouldn't feel like, oh, I'm losing my tenure as a result of this transition. Or at the branch campuses, oh, I'm losing my job for the most part as a result direct result of this. The campuses, I think, were encouraged to try and work out, okay, how do you have the faculty and how are they integrated into the academic planning that's occurring in departments, the programmatic array, and the curricular planning. That could not be done by system administration. There was we could not get involved in department by department issues so much as, again, we also helped to set the framework, but how you should be working through this at the campus level. The other example I'll use is regards to athletics. So again, I don't know if I want to use athletics. Let me think about it. I think it's slightly different. I'll look at HR maybe. Go back to HR. We said to UW College as an extension HR, you've got to, you'll be the ones, and they agreed to this in the MOUs, working with each of the receiving institutions to determine how things like, how are these employees and their benefits going to transition across in the HRS system, and making sure that that was done appropriately. Now, if there were questions that were asked about, what's what's our principle around unemployment insurance, or what's our principle around, bigger picture sort of question around making sure that there's a consistent application of a principle. When do you want to actually officially move the employees over in HRS? Versus transition kind of the reporting authority, that was system who set the principle. Campuses had to kind of be the ones at the campus level to be interfacing with the employees and answering their questions from a campus context.
Okay. So when you're sort of like formulating these things, policies about?
Well, you have to look at what exists. Mm-hmm. What exists already in policy within the system? The system has 400 plus system-wide policies. If you look at the board and you look at the system administrative policy set, and each campus has their own policies. So we had to be clear during the transition year, for these employees, colleges and extensions personnel policies are going to apply for this transition year, just so that, again, people don't have to worry about that during this year. That was part of the MOUs. I don't know. We try to avoid creating new policy just for the project, and I'm a big proponent in not doing that for temporary solutions, because, again, the UW system is the fourth most highly regulated environment for higher ed in the country. So there are a lot of state and there's a lot of state law and regulation on top of our own Board of Regents policies and administrative policies. So it was more, I think we always push to, what do our existing policies allow us to do? Let's be as employee friendly as we possibly can, given the work that's going on here and given that this is a time of significant change, and kind of just move on from there. That's, again, it's more about the principle that's being set from system administration and kind of, again, how do you minimize disruption? How are you understanding kind of through this? But there are clear timelines and there's things that we need to do, because that's what, again, we have committed to our accreditor. But let's not create new policies that we issued. The system-wide decisions are all on the restructuring website. The steering committee minutes and materials were sent broadly to the same distribution groups after each steering committee meeting, which was monthly throughout most of the project until I'd say the last 6 months of the project, where we held more meetings remotely and we may have cancelled a couple of meetings because there wasn't anything to discuss with that group. Yeah. Go ahead, though. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. Talk about what you
want to
talk about.
No. I'm done. Yeah.
Oh, what was I going to say? I had a question, and then I lost it. Oh, it's coming back again.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to, formulating principles, how do you sort of, could you expand on how that works with the individualized, identities of, the UW colleges, and then the UW Extension, which is, its own thing? How you formulate principles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at a broad principle, you want to transition the services across as successfully as possible, right? So that there aren't things that are unintentionally lost in the transition. Sure, receiving institutions may choose to operate certain services differently in the context of four-year campuses may be used to providing a certain level of service that is different than UW colleges, because UW colleges was what I would call a mini system within the UW system. One central office that was providing a lot of centralized services to the two-year schools. So when we went back we talked individually to each unit within colleges and extension, again, like human resources, finance, student affairs, and the subunits underneath, and we talk to them about, okay, what is it that you do? Talk to us about the FTE in your area. What do they do? And we had to kind of reverse engineer, okay, so now as we look at how these services and the funding is going to be apportioned back out, what is the fairest way of doing this, considering the service? In the beginning, we did have to go line by line by line through the college's budget and line by line by line through the UW Extension budget. My colleagues more so on the Extension side, Gillian Kitchen, who served as the deputy project lead for a while, can talk a lot about the budget and financing side, but she was really involved with the extension piece in particular too. But we went line through line, and again, there was a great degree of thoughtfulness put in around what is the most equitable way of distributing funding for these particular services to the receiving institutions now, given that UW colleges operated a slightly different model. It's also about expectation setting, right, as well. If you're at a four-year campus, you may have a different service model for certain student services than exists in a branch campus, in a two-year campus to centralized service provider, because UW colleges had gone through a round of regionalization before all of this, and budget cuts along with the rest of the system significantly before this. So they were already, and our accreditors recognized it, very thin in certain areas on the student services side, where the four-year schools, again, have a different expectation, I would say, just because of their own lens and their own context on those services.
Could you expand on that?
In what way? I guess in what way? There's not really much more I can expand on in terms of that. I think if you were to look at some of the materials that were issued after the accreditor's report was written on that fall 2018 visit, that the focused visit the accreditors conducted, there had to be they had to write a report basically stating, this is okay, this is fine, we don't need to check back in. Or they could have said, no, we want to check back in, this is not going according to what we had said. Well, technically, they probably could have come back and then said, wait, these guys are way off base. Like, let's put a pause on this project. That didn't happen. It was option one, which was they're making appropriate progress. The review of the accreditation of the branch campuses can now occur in the context of the review of the accreditation of the four-year institutions now that they've joined with. So I think that speaks to that. But there, you'll see that student services was focused on in that report because, again, of the budget decisions that had to be made at UW College as an extension prior to restructuring. It had a lot of centralized service, centralized solution centers, and they provided a lot of service with not terribly, not that much funding, just because of the budget situation. Again, their commitment really to their students was evident to me throughout the course of the project and transitioning services. And again, how do you help students understand what this impacts and what this really doesn't impact for them?
Mm-hmm. With students, what do you choose to highlight for them?
What do you mean highlight?
Like communicate to them about the process.
Yeah, I think the main things the main things in the beginning. So when we set up the questions portal, mm-hmm. one of the thing with students was, are the campuses closing? Like, oh my goodness, am I going to be able to finish my degree? Am I, just answering basic questions and saying, no, the campuses aren't closing. Yes, you'll be able to kind of finish your course of study. They were interested in, oh, is this going to impact, what will the benefit be eventually? Like, is this going to make transfer easier? And that's one of the goals of the project, right? Is medium to long term, and there's a transferology project occurring right now to enhance right now we have the TIS system, the transfer information system. It's antiquated. We're upgrading that, which will be beneficial for students. But medium to long term, it's trying to make transfer easier for students across the system so they can go where they want to go, and impeding there isn't unnecessary barriers to student success that don't need to be there. And so part of this is the with a tighter connection with the four-year institutions, hopefully that would be borne out in the long term is improving student transfer. So that was one of the questions we got. Others ranged on like athletics, I think, was one, and how, are we going to continue to be able to play club sports? I think the answer is, athletics was more of a... the definition of athletics is different at a four-year school, like intercollegiate athletics versus at a two-year campus where there was inter-site or inter-campus sports going on, but it wasn't intercollegiate athletics in the same way that a four-year institution would think about it. Am I going to be able to access some of the services at the receiving institution? That depends on how the receiving institution's kind of going to work with you on the segregated fees Whitewater. Whitewater has a shuttle bus now between the branch campus and the main campus in Janesville, I think, just to build that kind of connection. That's been wildly popular throughout there, just helping people actually show the connection between the branch and the main campus. Oshkosh. Oshkosh was the last campus to have a naming convention for its branch campuses. They put in a lot of effort and time trying to have a study that kind of got people's perspectives about, okay, how can we successfully, what would be inclusive for... Like, I think that they were very interested in not just what the name is and doing like a naming study, but also what would make people feel a better sense of engagement with the institution. And so they used the kind of naming marketing study as a tool to try and engage people and get their thoughts and concepts about this new relationship, really, between the branch campuses and the main campus. So again, what the one thing that we were cognizant of was that each individual campus within the UW system, yes, there is a system, but each campus has its own culture and identity and focus area. Part of the decisions in the beginning where we aligned the branch campuses with the four-year institutions wasn't just based on geographical proximity, but also on programmatic array and opportunity in the future. And so I think there's plenty of long-term possibility for these partnerships to grow and evolve. I mean, you're not at the end of restructuring yet. June 2020 is technically the end phase of the project, which our office is still tracking a few system-wide milestones. So,
What are you guys still tracking now?
There's a few like IT related milestones that need to be completed. Mainly that couldn't be completed before the start of the last academic year. That period, because you know we talked about like the MOUs going and from July 1 of 2018 to June 30 of 2019. There wasn't, in some of those instances, though, a recognition that you can't turn certain things on or off in the middle of the academic semester. Summer semester, so you had to wait until the end of the summer semester and the beginning of the school year to make certain transitions happen. And I think on the IT side, pardon me, there were things that weren't as high of a priority on the back end that the CIOs kind of worked out and were like, okay, this can wait a while.
I'm kind of curious about consultancy. So could you expand on like the decision to include outside consultants?
So Huron, we ran an RFP. Huron was the firm that was selected. Huron and their engagement with other campuses throughout the US. I mean, part of this is broadening your lens so that you're not just focused on what's, you know, part of this is a balance, right? It's, you have system expertise and the way we do things in Wisconsin, and then you bring in consultants to offer you the, how do other campuses handle this? Other institutions may have had some experience with mergers and consolidations, AKA Georgia. How do you kind of work with people who bring in that outside perspective to help you shape the project? So there were two things where consultants became really useful. One was in the project management office context. The PMO was a blended PMO from the beginning of the project through until September of 2018, when system admin staff comprised the entirety of the PMO, given where the workload was. So again, what Huron was able to bring to the project was, again, that more global perspective. They were able to actually go out to some of the receiving institutions that kind of wanted directly consulting help and go to the campuses and actually become embedded with the campuses. Oshkosh is a good example of where this occurred, and Stevens Point as two kind of core examples. Centrally, they're also able to work with system admin staff in terms of core project management responsibilities. What are your milestones? Are we tracking? Are we making progress appropriately? Helping with communication and facilitating that, and also providing advice on what's the overall nature of the work that remains. So the focus for the first part of the project was on accreditation, transition of services, etc. Before Huron left, one of the pivots was, well, you also need to think about how you decommission UW colleges and extension appropriately and wind down that entity. If you think about like in the private sector, and I know people like this analogy, but if you think about it from a private sector perspective, you have, you know, in a if you have like an M&A or that sort of thing going on, there is a process for certain elements that you need to kind of tie the bow on closing out, in essence, that you need to think about not just how you have joined the entities together, but what sorts of things no longer need to be done, and how do you wind down those particular services or functions. And so we pivoted from a true functional team model into work streams for the second kind of part of the project, which was, you know, the UW Extension and UW Madison integration was one work stream. The standing up of UW Shared Services now out of what was really the UW Colleges and Extension Central HR, IT, and Procurement Units was another work stream, separately planned for, but still born out of restructuring. The SIS project and all its hours of time and records, another major work stream. And then you had kind of closeout, really, which was, again, you have several accounts. Well, you've transitioned the funds. How are you winding out the accounts and backing out of the colleges and extension accounts that no longer need to exist? How do you switch certain things off in HRS? How, on a very base level, how are you removing signage that used to relate to the old colleges and extension, you know? So there were closeout related milestones. It's a shade of distinction from just transitioning the service. That makes sense?
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting that they're sort of like related things, that just sort of, like you said, shared services,
mm-hmm.
just sort of born out of the same thing.
Restructuring provided a unique opportunity for us to look at a shared services function. You have seen over the course of the past several years budget cuts to the UW system that have been widely publicized, well known. For our smaller campuses, you often see, in my alma mater at Superior, you see one person wearing like 5 or 6 different hats, right? You don't have the advantage to take the economies of scale that you may have at larger institutions. And what that means is, it's more of the comprehensive schools, the question becomes, do you need to be doing that particular service at the institution, or is there more of a service provider model for particular functions for related to HR, IT, and procurement, certain things that don't need to be different at a campus and can be handled centrally or can be, you know, customized to serve you centrally so that there's more consistency of service, so that you can use, again, funds that you were using previously, maybe to redivert that or redirect that to the academic core, so.
Yeah, I think about that with libraries. That's a big thing,
mm-hmm.
sharing services across libraries.
Well, the librarians, you guys have been all over that sharing longer than most, right? If you think about the interlibrary loan programs, etc., right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All about that. Talked about the steering committee. Talked about how the phases kind of changed. What did you feel like the mood was with like your staff and the staff that you interacted with on a regular basis?
My staff within the project management office?
Yeah.
And then staff.
Or just administrative.
You mean within system? Sorry, I just
system,
want to be
yeah.
within system admin.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was, again, how you get your arms around the project. you know, the scale of the project. If I look at the project, I always talk to folks, in, from my lens at least, about the triangle: scale, speed, and complexity. And this hits all three in my mind. Big project. Complex. Number of functions need to transition across, and you need to have appropriate planning coordination so that nothing catches people off guard as to why something is being done at the system level and how that syncs up with what's going on at the campus level. That's why we always, like for the last, during the transition year, even before, tried to publish a roadmap that let people know here's what's being completed at the system level. I'd say the work and the pace is very difficult, right? Because people, to your point earlier, and fair, a lot of people weren't expecting this to be on their workload early on, right? And so when this was announced and you know, it was roll up your sleeves and let's figure this out now that we have to announce it. And again, I will very much give credit to the collegiality and hard work of people throughout the system in making this happen on the timeline that it did. Were there probably some days where folks, you know, were frustrated about things? Yeah, 100%. You know, why can't we do, you know, why can't we transition things this way? Why can't we, you know, isn't this a campus responsibility versus a system thing? What, you know, it's small things like that that actually, if you think about it, are questions really that are fundamental to the system and are ongoing in the system regardless of restructuring, right? Campuses will typically push for institutional autonomy. System, with this being a system, this is not Michigan where we have a, where there is no system of higher education. System will try and bring a coordinated approach where we need to ensure the overall, you know, that there isn't a disparate effect occurring because of a decision that's made at one campus. You've got to think about, you've got to think more globally about, okay, what does access and affordability look like across the institutions, across the 26 campuses. So going back to your question though, like, I think the hard, but so one is how do you get people past the surprise of, you know, maybe not knowing about the project to kind of transitioning into, okay, we've got to move forward and get this done. I am very thankful for the individuals that we hired into the project management office, who were always willing to roll up their sleeves and work with folks in HR, folks in IT, procurement. Okay, what do you need? But to that point, there's the role of the project manager is different than the role of like the functional team lead, your subject matter expert, right? You're relying on, it's like a partnership. Your functional team lead looking at, let's say, like the student application process, and if there's any changes that we need to make, is going to be, and student recruitment is going to be very different than this project manager who may not have that expertise but is willing to help kind of coordinate and facilitate and bring the, okay, well, we have this overall project timeline, how does your kind of piece of the puzzle fit in? So part of it is acclimatizing system administration to project management in an environment that maybe outside of IT hasn't always been used to project management, if that makes sense. So again, it's partly kind of defining that role in an environment where people weren't expecting a massive project and this to be added to their workload. And you know, I think as the project wore on and people got more into the probably into the kind of natural groove of things, as it were, once we were able to bring more clarity in terms of, okay, here's what we need to accomplish and here are the milestones and here's the way we're going to try and work it out on a regular cadence, I think that increased people's, okay, let's, you know, calmness about things. There are still individuals though who, I mean, the project is very personal for folks. College is an extension, you know, because you know, literally the institution does not exist anymore. And it's being sensitive to the fact that this is, there are people involved in this project. You know, you've heard me talk in this conversation about the numbers that show the scale of restructuring. But within each of those numbers, there's a person, there is a human being that is facilitating a process or working on a campus to make sure that students aren't negatively impacted by this. That this does, that this transition mechanically worked as best as we could in the time frame that we had. And so I am thankful for the people, because without the people, this project doesn't get done on time.
Yeah, I think pretty important. Yeah. Okay. Talked about communication. All right. Is there anything you'd like to add? Anything that just comes to mind? You're like, gotta talk about this.
So a few things. I mean, one, this sort of project isn't something you can go into and hope to solve every problem on day one. Like, if people were going back and thinking, oh, you know, you can have months, you can have a different planning time frame than this project and still not solve every problem on day one. There are things that will just crop up that you'll be like, oh, okay, how do we address this? And you have to be open and flexible and calm enough to just rationally work through it, provide people as much guidance as you can, and move on from there. Two, there can never be enough communication on a project of this size. And it's tough in an environment in higher ed that you're so used to emails that, you know, one of my reflections would be, other projects have done this subsequently that have been really, I think it's been well received, but how do you broaden out your communication methodology to reach people as broadly as possible, right? Three, I think the importance of trying to define the campus role in the project and campus staff versus what system could handle and manage was something that I think I'm glad we got there kind of when we did in really President Cross in February of 2018 kind of set the tone in terms of trying to make that delineation clearer for folks, because that was an important component of moving forward in a constructive manner given the timeline that we had, trying to define responsibility. I think the next point I'd raise, the memoranda of understanding, and I'll give credit to my colleague in the General Counsel's office, Noah Brisbane, because he was the one who kind of actually made the stuff that was going on in my head and a couple of others actually putting it down onto paper and having the structure. But those were key, along with the management plan, in terms of being guideposts for how we conducted the transition year. You screw up the transition year, you don't allow yourself enough time for actually transitioning the services, because the services you're providing aren't working. That causes problems. We'll see. And that would not have gone well with our accreditors. I think in terms of like the long-term ramifications of restructuring, there's a lot of like question, right? There's like, given your project goals, did this all work? And the thing that I always like to remind people is, again, restructuring the project as we submitted it to our accreditors on Martin Luther King Day in 2018, federal holiday, that was the date that HLC chose, they actually wound up being, but you are not finished with that project. And that this is the first year where the services have 99% fully transitioned to the receiving institutions, where they have full operational control instead of relying on colleges and extension as the service provider during the transition year. So this is the first year, and not even fully for the first year. This is the second semester, halfway through, where they work through that, and they will continue to refine those services over time to make sure that the branch campuses are appropriately integrated. I think that if I, you know, if in my ideal world, would there have been a PMO ready on day one to kind of take up this project, right, you know, when it was announced in November 2017? Yeah, there would be. There would be. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn or out of school when it comes to that. System leadership, system staff stepped up in the beginning to kind of help to facilitate this, you know, with me. And I appreciate in particular Vice President Kramer kind of being my, you know, being the steering committee chair and being my supervisor, kind of working through this and giving us enough space at the beginning to kind of put our arms around this. I would say for me, I just remember again those nights in Van Heist or really early mornings where we're just trying to kind of turn a concept into actual reality. You know, he was very supportive all the way through this process about giving people time to work things through, being calm about any issues that we were encountering, and encouraging us. Keep up the cadence of reporting to him. So we held weekly meetings with him throughout with the project management office to kind of track progress. At the beginning, we met with President Cross pretty regularly, directly. But as time wore on, it was like, okay, now that we've set the course, let us just execute against, pardon me, the plan and the milestones. Let's continue with the regular cadence of reporting to the board, and kind of go on from there. These types of projects are difficult because the system is undergoing massive change outside of restructuring. There are other projects campuses have going on. There are other projects, system-wide projects, like a new budget and planning tool being implemented, the title and total compensation study that has other kind of ramifications for employees. And so given everything else that people had going on to make this kind of work, again, I just can't give people our partners on campuses, as well as, you know, I think the consultants who work with us both in the project management side, as well as we had consultants work with us on the SIS project with the technical implementation of actually transitioning the records across, because you don't have, campuses don't necessarily have the IT staff to just handle that by themselves. And plus the expertise to actually map out how you're going to approach that particular project. I would just give people a lot of credit and thanks for, again, what they were doing. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.